Up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, 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 oh. Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.
That's Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes with a call to action. Wake up, everybody! It's the title track from their 1975 album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're on to part two of yesterday's discussion about the need for clarity, more so than for unity, in the aftermath of the gruesome week we've just had. Today, Presidents Obama and George Bush are in Dallas attending memorial services for the police officers, the five who were killed, and of course to express condolences and concern for the seven others wounded there in that awful shooting, a revenge shooting, it was classified as, by a lone gunman, Micah Johnson. And we have also going on around the country, we have protests in the street about this lingering problem of police killings of civilians. So we have a two-sided coin here that has been tossed. And what I wanted us to take a look at is how systems operate. They're designed to operate in a particular way so that no matter what the issue, it may at best be just a small interruption or a little ripple effect, but the system will go right back to operating the way it always has. It's designed that way. That's why it's called a system. The political system today, for example, has Bernie Sanders endorsing, enthusiastically endorsing Hillary Clinton, and with a vow that she must be the next president. Now, it didn't start out that way, but the system, as we predicted, this is no surprise. If you've listened to this program, you know, we talked about this, we predicted this, we saw this coming. Months and months and months ago, I tried to sound the warning bell that this is exactly where it was going to go. And here we are. And people are acting, the press is acting like there's this big surprise. There's no surprise here. This is how systems work. They are quite predictable. This had to happen if the system is to prevail. And the only thing that we were holding on to was this little splinter of hope that Bernie Sanders would actually live out both the spirit and intent of this movement he had launched and would proceed with building an independent movement, redefining what winning is, and choosing precisely this moment to make the point of independent action. He has 13 million votes to start with, which isn't bad. But let's return to this question about how we are to see the system, how systems operate. And we think it's something new. There's nothing new here. The tragedy, the profundity of it, perhaps is more intense than we have seen in a while. But the system is operating quite predictably. We had immediately the media being brought into play to give us the idea that we had to choose sides. We don't have to choose anything. We just simply have to appreciate what is going on. But we have to choose sides. We are compelled to do so. We are compelled to have absolutely no sympathy at all for the wrong people and only sympathy for the right people. We are compelled to see this in its rather simplistic analysis of, well, a guy went in there and did a lot of wrong things. Or, in the case of the young men who were cut down in Louisiana and in Minnesota, somehow in the middle of all of this chaos and the tragedy, they were somehow responsible for what happened to them. They were demonized. Their long records, criminal records, of course, and failing to really obey the police commands. We see all this going into a very formulaic approach. And it is designed for one purpose and one purpose only. And that is to reinforce across the board, reinforce the understanding and the acceptance of that understanding of the power of the police. They are what keeps law and order in our society. And we, the citizens, we may from time to time have trouble with the way they do things, but we are to be content with the idea that there's only so much we can do. They are the power. They are the extension of the power elite. And we have to accept this. There's nothing we can do about it. That's the message. We have, however, some very interesting things that are very significant in this case, in these cases, in this past week. We have the astute use, I use the word use because that's what it boils down to, the use of African Americans in a very, very particular way to convey the messages that African Americans would have found abhorrent coming from anybody else. But somehow, it's coming from a black police chief. It's coming from a black president. It's coming from black leaders. That yes, we should be upset and we should be calm, just the same. We should work toward a solution. We should really understand how tough it is to be a police officer. We should understand the pressures that they're under. And from time to time, things go really wrong. But on the whole, even when things go really wrong, so much goes so right every day. And we ought to be grateful. Of course, none of this brings us anywhere close to what is at issue here. All these arguments are distractions. They are appealing to our emotions. They don't get us anywhere close to what it is we ought to be thinking about. And what we ought to be thinking about, if we are in fact interested in change, is we ought to be thinking about change. And not in the old-fashioned way that, you know, you have big demonstrations and then you crawl back into a safe space and we hear from you again the next time something happens. That's not the change I'm talking about. I'm talking about the change that comes from clarity. Do we understand the system that governs us? Do we understand it? If we, in fact, do understand it, then we would change our approaches to it. We change our mentality about it. And more importantly, we'll change our mentality about us and our ability as people to effect that change. But at the root of all of these protests is an acceptance, if you will, of the power equation, which is rotten, which is wrong. It's lopsided. We are begging. We're asking. We're pleading. We are hoping that somebody would listen. We are looking for them to solve the problem. The clarity should tell us they cannot solve the problem, or they're not interested in solving this problem. So we ought to get clear about certain things. This problem is not going to be solved by the system. It just won't. It has too much to lose to genuinely approach a solution to these problems that we've been experiencing. It has way too much to lose. It will have to alter the power equation in this country, which is based entirely on race. It will have to actually admit how important, how integral race is to life in the United States and to the standing order. We can't have that. So we have people coming as close as they can, but not doing what they need to do to effect real, genuine change. That is, it is not even real within the realm of possibility to hold out the hope that the system will change. It will not. It has spent billions of dollars to scientifically design itself to be impregnable, to be impervious to change, to be resistant to change. Change is not good. In the law enforcement system, change is not good in many aspects of life in the United States. They like it just the way it is. It's designed to be exactly that. The problem is that people don't get that. Even though time and again, we're told in so many words, forget it. It's not going to happen. But we keep hoping. We keep praying. We keep asking. We keep begging. We keep pleading. We keep appealing to their conscience. This has nothing to do with conscience. It has nothing to do with what's right. It has nothing to do with what's fair. It's a system. And it's only interested in its interests, period. That's what it's interested in, its interests. So if we have clarity, we would recognize that we need to retool our approach to problem solving. We need to recognize that this is not about appealing to anybody's sense of morality. There is none. There's none to be had. They talk about it. They talk, you know, whatever it is they say, they yammer, whatever would get them through the day and get them a good sound bite and make their profile stand out as conscientious people. But they don't mean it, and they don't want it. So it brings us back to this question. Why are we repeating strategies and actions? Why are we taking actions we know will take us nowhere? Is it our job to save America? No. That's America's job. We have to come to some conclusions at some point. It is not my job to make anybody, to improve anybody's heart. It is not my job to save America. It's my job to just survive. That's my job. It's a full-time job. Because the odds are stacked against me and against people like me. I can't love you into humanity. I mean, in a philosophical world, I guess that's possible. And in the religious world, we talk about the power of love and all of that stuff. But I'm a pragmatist. It doesn't work. So why would I spend my time, the limited amount of time I have, wasting it on somebody who doesn't get it and intends not to get it? Clarity. You have to become clear about certain things. It's hard. It sounds almost heartless to say. I mean, there's no hope. Of course there's hope. But clarity tells us that's your job, not my job. My job is to try to find a way to survive the intended actions, the intended policies. That's my job. To deal with people who should be able to survive as well. My job is not to save America. It's not to give it a soul. It is to stop the bleeding. It is to stop the genocide. It is to help fashion a solution that works. It is to alter this power equation. It really drives me crazy. I must commend people just the same that they are motivated to get out in the streets and protest and say, this is wrong. This is not what we're supposed to be experiencing. This is not the democratic way, if you will. And we, the people, shouldn't be experiencing these things time and time again. And when we look for solutions, we get blather. We get empty words and cute little phrases and a promise to throw more money at the problem as if that is what will solve the problem. Clarity will tell us these people are not the right people for the job in the first place. They can't solve the problem. And those who can will not be willing to take on the task of solving the problem. We just saw that today. Bernie Sanders capitulates to the worst possible candidate for president and is enthusiastically going to promote her. Now, you can't begin to tell me what an antithetical thing that is to a person who took such a moral stance at the beginning. And then you become an acolyte of and an ambassador for the worst, a kakistocrat, one of the worst possible people for leadership of the country. So we have to be clear. months and months ago, I was very clear about this. I was very clear about Jesse Jackson, very clear about these charlatans. And I kept saying to folks, we're going to have to find new models. We have to punish these people. We have to find ways to move them out of our way, put them out of our misery. Flex our own political muscles. Organize our own communities with respect to our shared interests. And move these people out of the way because they are impediments to progress. And worse, they are actually impediments to our success in life, to our very survival. But you have to have clarity. You have to have clarity about it. You have to stare the problem dead in the face. Right now, all the coverage about the killings and so forth, and it's a very emotional subject. But they're not getting anywhere close to what is really at issue here. And they're not intending to. It is too ugly. It will not serve them well. So you divert interests just to get over the hump. And then the system kicks right back in as usual until the next conflagration. I'm saying, let's arrive at certain points of clarity. And on the basis of that clarity, we begin to be pragmatic about the way we move politically, the decisions we make. And we finally gather up the courage to say, you may not like where we're going with this, but that's your problem. The system has been given the benefit of time, the benefit of doubt, the benefit of political support and money and taxpayer dollars. It's had everything at its disposal to solve a problem. But it hasn't, and it can't, and it won't. So that's the clarity we need. We could start right there. It hasn't, and it won't. Now, based on that kind of clarity, now we get into a discussion as to where do we go next? What's next? I'm not interested in discussing people's moral suasions and whether this is right or whether something else is wrong. I'm interested in the fact that here we are facing down the same problem that began centuries ago. And objectively, our condition of life as an oppressed group in the United States is not very much different from the way it was centuries ago. So having arrived at clarity about that, my own question to myself is, so what's next? What is the best strategy to get out of this? You can't love them into humanity. You can't love this system into humanity. You can't have the faith that it will understand the wrong it's committing. It is dedicated to committing wrong. It is quite purposeful about it. All these commissions and commissions that studied the commission's report and other commissions that will meet later on to regurgitate the previous commission's reports and form new commissions and all of this kind of nonsense. It is all a game to say, well, the record will reflect that we tackled the problem. And now we have the privilege of hearing even the President of the United States approaching this as a bureaucratic issue. And we know it's a systemic racism issue. And because white supremacy slash racism is a fundamental component of life in the United States, there is no way they're going to root it out. No way it's going to happen. So it brings me right back to this question. What is the way out? Forget calls for unity. We should start issuing calls for clarity, because it seems to me that too many of us have literally lost our minds. We keep falling for this stuff. And we keep repeating things that are not working. And if they are working, they certainly are not working in our interests. They're working in service of white supremacy in this country, of inequality, of that distance, that unbridgeable gap, because that's what this society is all about. So, I'm asking you, we'll take this short break and I'll come back to your calls. What are your thoughts about this notion of arriving at a point of clarity about certain things? Not to say that you agree. You don't agree that the world should be unfair. You don't want to agree that we are, in fact, ruled by a power structure that is enormous and is well-funded and well-armed and controls our lives. We don't agree with these things. But are we clear about these things? That's the question. Are we clear about it? Are we going to arrive at a point of clarity about these things anytime soon? Dare we hope for that? So that in turn it informs a new way of thinking, a new paradigm, a new approach, a new philosophy that tells us we are entitled to be co-owners of this thing called democracy. We too are rulers. And we too have interests and needs that need to be met. But from what I'm seeing, we're not quite clear about certain things, really critical things. They're fuzzy. They're not well defined. And so we get confusing and mixed signals about where we ought to go. We ought to be real clear. Are we going to get to that point anytime soon? That's the question. We'll take your calls at 888-874-4888 right after the short break. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and the question on the table today, have we arrived yet at a point of clarity about certain critical things? If so, what are those things? And what does clarity about those things then do for us in terms of finding a new path, a new way that would be beneficial to us personally, individually, but in the aggregate sense, in the communal sense as well? I've already given you my views on that. I shared my views. I think we have to deal with this. I like being real basic about things. We've got to get to certain points of clarity, incontrovertible truths. And then we go from there. Jeff, you're on the air.
I found the comments very interesting. What I would just say, my comment is this. The idea when you said that white supremacy or racism is systemic, I've heard this from Hillary Clinton many times also, that somehow this is the root or a huge problem in America. My opinion is on what the problem is that the heart is deceitfully wicked, and who could know it? The wickedness of a man's heart and the failings of one's life in that sense is one of the major roots. And I'm not saying that there's no one that is ever racist, but to say that our system is rooted in white supremacy, if I'm hearing you right, that somehow that is our problem. Because I see Asians, blacks, Hispanics that I know personally that have done very well economically, whether it's their own business, whether they've gone up to president of a company, or whether they've been successful economically. I'm not denying at all that there's a problem. I'm not denying the problem. But I'm also, when this is thrown out like this about white supremacy, I just don't believe that. The 54 years I've lived in the United States, I don't believe that's the root of it. That's just how I see it anyway.
Well, I appreciate your view. I think, though, what I'm getting at is that if you look back at the foundations, the philosophical foundations of this country, and even the religious foundations of the country, it's quite racist. And it evolved into this vision that it should be so forever. That there is to be no equality. You look at Supreme Court decisions. I mean, libraries of law books deal with this question about race and the various ways in which this very premise has been challenged in courts of law. We had the Supreme Court ruling that the black man has no rights that the white man need respect. That was law. And that was just one of several laws. We had bodies of law that perpetuated this schism so that there would always be a group, an elite group, and everybody else being ruled by the elite group. So it is a permanent thread in the fabric of American life. We can't deny it. The question is, even when we hear it from people like Clinton, she says, she wouldn't say it's racism. She says it's residual or implicit. They dress it up. What is that? No, let's look at it for what it is. But I'm saying also, I think we need to get beyond that. This is part of the clarity I'm talking about. I don't want to spend my life trying to rehabilitate a system. It is important for me only to recognize what the system is and to plan and maneuver accordingly. That's what I'm saying. It will continue. I accept that it will continue to be so for a very long time to come, way past the time that I'm making my exit, of course. But that doesn't mean that I should, for the rest of my life, devote myself to rehabilitating a system that is impervious to it. It's absolutely dedicated to inequality. It is absolutely dedicated to maintaining this schism based on race largely. But it's also now more including class. And then it will include other things. But race was really where it started. And for the large part is. Now, this does not negate the validity of your idea and the validity of your observation, because you're telling me your truth, and I appreciate that. But I'm saying, too, we have to come to clarity about certain things. There are people who are oppressed by reason of race. I think it is important to recognize that if you're a member of that group and stop this habit of pleading with a system that has no intention of improving your lot, and get on with the business of strategizing so that you can survive and thrive. That's my view. I thank you for your call, Jeff. Very, very, I should say, thought-provoking ideas that you put forward today. Thank you so much for that. Patricia from New York, what have you to say?
Good afternoon, Eutrice. I'm glad to hear you're doing quite well. And good
Thank
afternoon
you.
To the PRN family.
Thank you.
You know, I remembered it was just about 2 years ago. There were three Israeli teenagers who were on a hiking trip and somehow wandered and got lost or whatever, and were eventually found killed. And their deaths were blamed on Hamas. And I remember Netanyahu said that those responsible would pay dearly. And dearly they did pay, if people remember. Men, but mostly women and children, paid quite dearly with their lives in retaliation for the deaths of these three teenagers. And I don't remember President Obama calling them their motivations twisted or deranged. As a matter of fact, Hillary Clinton went to AIPAC, if you remember, back in April, and said that the Israelis didn't punish Hamas enough. And so as I watched the police officer in Minnesota shoot into a car with a four-year-old child in the back seat, and I watched the mother of Mr. Sterling in Louisiana at a press conference with her 15-year-old child sobbing uncontrollably about the fact that he wanted his father, it actually brought me to tears that no one had any sympathy for this four-year-old child in the back seat of this car and this 15-year-old child crying unconsolably for his father. And so, unfortunately, Eutrice, black and brown people have difficulty, extreme difficulty, accepting the reality that they see in front of their eyes. You know, it's like my eyes are not seeing what I see, and my ears are not hearing what I hear. You know, that old proverb that without struggle, there is no progress. And black and brown people want progress without struggle and without sacrifice. They want an easy road. And as we know, history tells us, there is no easy road. And so while I agree with you that the first step is recognition that the system is designed to sustain itself. It feeds itself. You know, to the previous caller, white supremacy is in the DNA of this country. It's like, how do you extricate the DNA from yourself without killing yourself? And the answer is you don't. Because the cell is designed to replicate and continue on and on and on. And so the issue is not for black and brown people to solve the problem. We didn't create the problem. So we cannot be the solute. The only thing that we can do, as you say, is develop a strategy to save ourselves. But the first thing we have to do is recognize that the system is here to sustain itself. And unfortunately, we have not been able on a large scale to get people to that place.
Well, there's always hope that we might be moving in a direction where people get really clear about certain things, incontrovertible truths, and don't waste time debating these things anymore. It's infuriating. Don't debate these things anymore. Don't get all academic about it and personalize it. No, there are certain points in time where you just have to accept certain truths. Not that you agree with it. Not that you like it or you support these things, but you are clear about them. You just are clear. So you move a little bit more smartly with the power that you do have, because you do have power. You use it differently.
I don't know if you've heard that Orta, the young man who filmed the Eric Garner chokehold killing, was just broken down. And he was just sentenced to 4 years in jail. And I remember the community rallied around him initially, and then they cut him loose. And so for 4 years, he's been fighting alone. And he just, resignation, and he just gave up and said, let me just take this time and go on with my life. And so here again, when you try to independently, on your own, do the right thing, you find that you're going to be out there sometimes all alone.
Mm-hmm. No question.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Patricia, for your call today. Bruce from Queens, what have you to say? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, hello, Therese. How are you doing?
Hi. Good. How about you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I just have a moment of clarity. It might be naive, but I'm giving it here's the pitch. I think the first family of humanity, which is us, people with melanin, should start creating our own system, starting with our own sovereignty, because we're not respected under the Constitution, the 14th Amendment. We're supposed to be protected after World War I, II. We could give up our arms for protecting our community, and was written in the Constitution that equal protection under the law, which is not respected. I think we should have our own sovereignty and deal with our own autonomy, if you will. I think that's what we should do. And we should start researching how the indigenous people of Oklahoma the Bureau of Indian Affairs got their own sovereignty. They governed.
They didn't exactly get sovereignty. And all the First Nations people will tell you that. Mm-hmm. What they ended up having to do is just to save some portion of their civilization and their nations, they had to come to terms with the U.S. government. And these were war treaties, essentially. I did a really good program about that, the treaties of the United States. And right now, the poverty rate among First Nations people is the worst in the country. The worst.
Okay.
So, that's an interesting story. What they did really was to hold on to their culture and to their land, which is a very intricate part of their culture. But the clarity in their view is that the government still, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, they exploited all of the resources of the First Nations. They still control them. Their land and everything under it and over it and around it. So, for many in the First Nations, mm-hmm. it's a kind of hard price to pay. but they hold on to their land. And we talked about, the wholesale poisoning of their land and the atrocities that have occurred.
And we are similarly going through this now. We're similarly going through this now, even though we're here in America and all through the diaspora. Look at what they're doing to Congo. In the Congo for the rich mineral and oil and diamonds and gold that's there. And what they're doing to the people, having people fighting each other just for the land.
But again, somewhere, even they will have to come to a point of clarity that they are literally aiding and abetting that nefarious plan to utterly destroy all of them. So, you hope for some, at some time, there would be a quiet space where people could say, well, gee, where exactly are we in the scheme of things? And what could we do? What is the choice? What is the best strategy to get ourselves out of this situation and on our way to something akin to progress? That's the question. If we arrived at a point of clarity, for example, about our leadership across the board, there is no way that we would subscribe to this two-party system.
That's right. No way.
There's no way we would tolerate that. There's no way we would tolerate what's going on in our schools. There's no way we would tolerate what's going on with our law enforcement departments across the country. There's no way we tolerate this stuff. When we have the power to influence these things and to compel them to change. However, we first have to come to a point of clarity about it.
Yes.
Thanks, Bruce, for your call today.
Thank you.
Okay. Jay from Queens, you're on the air. Jay, are you there?
Hi. Yes, Eutrice, I am, and thank you. I want to continue with some of the comments and the theme of what people are saying. I'm going to be a little more optimistic, but I also want to express and thank for the forum that you create, a real forum, unlike any other show I've heard, that really allows the engagement of discussion and with forethought by how you prepare your show to engage people to really think. Thank you. I will say this. As much as your first caller said that in his paradigm, his viewpoint, there have been individual successes that he's witnessed where people who irrespective of race have made it through. He's right. On an individual basis, this is true. But as the subsequent caller, the second caller said, it is white supremacy, the nature of oppression and the system and how it's structured by race, the fallacy of the social construct, is the way in which it continues and survives. And while recognizing its systemic root, the challenge we have in being optimistic in that moment of clarity is not only to recognize the misleadership and the way in which this system will not change under the basic constructs, but as Chris Hedges has said, and as even Gary Null in the closing of his show intimated, the decay of this society, the Western capitalist structure, is happening before our eyes, whether it's in the Brexit or in the European Union as the globalists try to consolidate nations and deconstruct nations with their intent for global capital and labor to move in interchangeably with though few and increasing inequality. The problem is a system built on ideological framework of race structure will destroy those at the bottom. And who is at the bottom? The African and the indigenous people who which this paradigm and this system was built upon. So while the others catch a cold, we will have the flu. And endemic to that is the possibility of our death. So in a moment of clarity, the only thing we must know, and it is not individualism, but a collective sense, that who I'm identified as by my oppressor requires that I engage those who understand and who are part of it. He who knows it or he who feels it, knows it, whether they be white, black, or otherwise, will engage in struggle to throw off the yoke of the oppression. And we have a responsibility to ourselves to throw it off, not individually, but to seek out collective, first and unclarity of where we are, what we're faced with, and what we must do. And it will require sacrifice, as the sister said and as others are saying.
We dare not speak what sacrifice that is. Yes, I'm not for violence. But when you can be violent against another nation and suppressing their will and self-determination, then you can expect the chickens will come home to roost, as Malcolm said. And we are there. And so, Mika, rest in peace. No one will say it, but we are at a point when the system will not correct itself. Violence and random acts of we will throw this yoke off by any means is necessary. And as Franz Fanon would express, anyone who has any inkling of where we are, it is not to be random in this nature. It's to understand it cannot go on. And clearly the paradigm of the political structure we have of the two-party system, as we witness today, with Sanders throwing his vote, I said to a party, a friend of mine, there will be a rush to the door by progressives and all who know better. And know what? There'll be people sitting on the sidelines, if not by virtue of the lack of a real third party candidate, possibly in a Jill Stein. But even then, Trump will go marching in, and here come your fascism to America. And the scenario I have is that potentially he will be the person that may win, bring in his fascist and imbecilic tendencies, but will be taken out by the powers who, and established interests who don't like even some of the things he's uttering. And ultimately,
in this moment that we're in, because the issue has taken center stage at this moment, and that is the law enforcement crisis. Yeah. What is the clarity that you have arrived at in this moment about this particular crisis?
I dare not speak. You just heard it. That's my answer.
Oh, okay.
There are those who are prepared. It is time. It's got to stop. Some of us are going to have to give it up. Give up our freedom for what we believe in. Because if they don't, the only thing they'll understand is more of them taken out. And I dare say that. That's where we are.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your call today. I appreciate your input. Nashi from New York, you're on the air.
How you doing, Chase?
Fine, thank you.
Well, there's so much to talk about. But, I mean, do you have the book Museum of the World?
No.
Okay. From Australia, New Zealand, all over the world where they have slaughtered indigenous people. And we're indigenous people shipped here from somewhere else. And during the 60s, when they had the rallies on 125th Street, all the people came there right across from the Hotel Teresa. And you got from all South America and all that. But they was trying to get the people out of their country. Now they immigrate here to be like these people. They push their, they drop all their cultural situation. It's an assimilation thing. And I mean, that goes across the board. And now we're even getting the segregation or discrimination from other people who went through the same situation in their countries from colonialism, but they discriminate against us. I don't know if you've experienced
that. Yeah, I get what you're saying, because right there in Harlem is a burgeoning African community, right in central Harlem, yeah. I would say.
Yeah, I mean,
about 110th all the way up to 127th to 128th Street, you have a very impressive burgeoning community.
Our view of the world, I mean, if you came from that era, if you came from the era from the 60s, is different than our brothers from wherever they're coming from. They don't look at it the same way.
Here's the thing. When you look back at where the original political movements started in Harlem, the Garvey movement, for example,
right,
and the radical thinkers of Harlem, they almost all of them were not... They did not come from the United States.
Right.
They were from the Caribbean, and they were African. They were people from the diaspora. And they shaped an international movement. Marcus Garvey was Jamaican and organized the world's largest movement.
Right.
Of Africans. So what I'm pointing to is, again, clarity. It was very clear to those people at that time that they had to look beyond these geographic boundaries, which meant nothing, and instead look at what was shared, the common culture, a common history, a common origin, and a common situation in life, a common potential. Almost all of the radical thinkers at the time came from outside of the United States and yet shaped international movements that in turn formed the basis, the intellectual basis and philosophical basis for a lot of the independence movements all throughout the African world, right there in Harlem.
Right.
So it's a matter, again, of clarity prevailing at one period and not at the other. I'm afraid I have to wrap up, though, because we're out of time.
Yeah, the thing that Gil Noble did with Jamil Alameen, I mean, used to be H. Rap Brown, I think that is one of the most, human being sticking to what he believed. And there's a lot of cases of that when we was evolving.
People have fallen into this trap of thinking, well, I'm American. All said and done, I'm American. I may be African-American, but I'm American too. There's a wider worldview, and it was prevalent, and it was the basis of the social, political, and economic success of African-Americans and their safety. As well, this clarity that was prevailing in the 1920s. Thanks so much for your call today. That brings us to the end of our program today. It's really important when these crises occur to look beyond what is obvious and what we're being told and look for a point of clarity about things. This point that we're in is supposed to tell us really give us instructions about what it is we ought to be doing to retool, because whatever it is we've been doing just simply isn't working or isn't working effectively. So we should stop the business of begging and pleading for a system that is impervious to our pleas and come up with something else. Arrive at a point of clarity about this thing. And hopefully it would inform our action. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crow. You can reach me at leidstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think of the program today. A great program coming up tomorrow. You want to definitely tune in for that. A pleasure and a great privilege always to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Using the dope. Wake up. Yeah.